This Bud Foster and Madden Mayhem Squares edition of the Sports Gambling Podcast is presented by mybookie.ag. The UFC is back. Korean baseball is going on. International soccer is back. NASCAR is back. Plus, they have tons of sports sims to bet on. Use the promo code SGP for up to $1,000 in bonus bets. That's mybookie.ag, promo code SGP to play, win, and get paid. We're also brought to you by Madden Mayhem. Our Madden Simulation Championship game is this Sunday night, and we're doing a $500 squares pool. Go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares. We're also brought to you by Ace Per Head. Ace is the leader in pay per head providers, and they make it super easy to start your own sportsbook. Plus, Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free over at aceperhead.com/SGP. That's aceperhead.com/SGP. Finally, we're also brought to you by Cushy Dreams. Cushy Dreams is a new company with a full lineup of premium smokable CBD. Now shipping legally to all 50 states. And if you use the promo code SGP, you get 15% off. That's KUSHYDreams.com, promo code SGP.
You're listening to the Sports Gambling Podcast exclusively on SGPN. Let it ride.
Fucking shine box.
Ooh, welcome everyone to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm Sean, stacking the money green with my partner of picks, Ryan Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer?
Greetings, Sean. What a fine, fine Tuesday here in the great year of 2020.
It was a
not a great day.
Joining us in studio, Colby Dan, aka the Danta Base.
Oh, I thought you were gonna call me the lunch pail third party here.
Well, of course, you're alluding to the interview, which we're gonna play here in a second with Bud Foster.
Be perfect today.
You see
be
what perfect. I did right there?
Coach is watching.
Bud Foster, defensive coordinator for Virginia Tech for over 30 years.
Legend.
Kramer lit up in the interview process.
Yeah,
I mean, if you've heard that, if you've listened to some of our interviews, specifically, you know, ones that I found less interesting, there's a correlation between my amount of talking and how interested I am in the guest. So, needless to say, Sean and Colby don't speak too much.
Kramer just bringing the heat, like a young recruit, trying to make it on Bud Foster's. Defense at Virginia Tech, doing whatever it takes to get out.
Showing
on the field.
Him, I'm willing to start on special teams.
It was a great interview, a lot of fun. We'll get to that.
And more importantly, Sean.
Yes.
Well, I'm saying more importantly, Sean.
Then Bud Foster, who? Oh,
we got a big announcement. The free cash bonanza keeps on coming. We're talking Madden Mayhem. Of course, you can bet on Madden Mayhem over at sports or mybookie.ag, promo code SGP. Streaming 8 games a night, 5 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Pacific, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we're down to the last 8, including the Madden Mayhem Championship game. And we're going to be doing a squares pool. For the Madden Mayhem Championship game. That's right, a squares pool.
No.
Much like a Super Bowl game, because it will be a Super Bowl atmosphere Sunday night when the winner of Madden Mayhem is decided. And that, of course, is 10 o'clock East Sunday, 7 o'clock on the West Coast. We don't know the teams yet, but we're giving away $500 in a squares pool. Just go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares. sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares. Of course, all the games you want to bet on, you can do that over at mybookie.ag, promo code SGP, play, win, and get paid. It's pretty simple. The squares competition, all you got to do, go to, like I said, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares. And you follow the instructions. Very clear. We have 3 different iTunes feeds for, or Apple, as Kramer likes to refer to it, our sports gambling podcast.
Sean, you just sound like an old person when you say iTunes. The application iTunes doesn't even exist anymore.
Well, what do you say, the Apple Podcast app?
Yes.
Come on, everyone calls it iTunes. I got my iPod going. Three different separate feeds: the Sports Gambling Podcast main feed, the Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed, and the College Experience feed. Do you want to do, if you've never given a 5-star review for each of them, then you have three opportunities to enter. First 100 entries received get a square. So if you want to double dip and you have I think you may need two different email addresses, but you can figure it out. Either way, take a screenshot of you submitting that 5-star review. It usually takes a day or two to go through. Don't worry about that. Just take the screenshot of you submitting it. And there's a very easy way to submit the form. You get it all figured out and you will be entered into the squares competition.
Sean, you said it was very easy multiple times. Do you have concerns that people will find a way to screw this up?
Anytime I do some sort of contest, anytime there's some sort of form, there's always a lot of questions. I become tech support. Just figure it out. And I'm very confident. If you can figure out how to bet on Madden Mayhem, which if you're listening to this podcast, you most certainly have already figured it out. You can figure out how to submit this 5-star review and get in the square. As if there's not enough gambling opportunity, future bets will be on the line. You got first half bets, odd, even, and all of it. Again, just take a step back and realize how awesome it is to be betting on football. Sure, it's simulated. Sure, it's just we're watching the computer play itself, but you're getting drunk. You're betting on games.
And it's
my
way
itch
better
is being scratched.
And it's way better than table tennis or whatever other weird thing you've been spending your time.
Marbles. Come on.
Marbles is cool. Marbles is actually pretty cool.
I watched one marble race, not moving my needle. I'll be honest.
And we're going to get to this later, Sean.
It's going
to
be weird when we're sponsored by Marble Racing in 2 weeks and I'm doing the hard sell for Marble Racing.
Yeah. Shout out to the Marbula One guy on YouTube. Just crushes it. High production value. We're doing a Super Bowl pool. We should tease to later in the show when I think we should each give out a refreshed Super Bowl prediction because we do have updated futures.
Yes, and we're going to be giving out our Madden Mayhem picks for the Elite Eight and doing a little pick action there. Like Kramer said, picking our AFC and NFC championship winners because we have like a weird wonky kind of collection of teams, and it's truly mayhem. And of course, we're the inventors of Madden Mayhem. If you've been on Twitter at Gambling Podcast, you see we've had to force another
get your fucking shine box.
A nameless anonymous sim company. They've been plagiarizing our name. Here's the thing, which is really annoying. Why we're on a third party sim company that's completely nameless? I don't understand that. MyBookie.ag, if we're not calling the games or simming the games, they're actually doing it. It raises a couple of red flags of why a sportsbook would hire this other company that won't announce their name or put their face to anything. And then this clown comes at us with like wrestling gifts.
It's the same reason you use Shell Corporation. Sean.
Exactly. We don't need to dive into it, but just, you know, primetime action on Twitter. Screw those guys. And screw them. All right, let's get to it. But before we bring on Bud Foster, give a little shout out to Ace Per Head.
Oh, I thought we were shouting out the new DJ.
Who's the new DJ?
I don't know. We're using old music, but the new DJ.
I like to mix it up. I have some new music, some old music, Ryan. You know what never goes old?
I'm feeling the new music today, though, Sean.
Okay. Well, you're going to hear it later on in the program. Stay tuned, Kramer. You know, it never goes out of style. Taking sports bets. That's right. You can become your own sports bookie. All you got to do is go to aceperhead.com/SGP, aceperhead.com/SGP. They'll help you get started in your start running your own sports book. And you don't have to be some sort of tech whiz like Kramer over here. It's pretty simple. All you got to do is go to their site. They'll get you going with a professional betting website. They got top-notch customer support, some of the sharpest lines in the industry. You know, they're Ace Per Head, great on mobile, in-game wagering. They got it all. Imagine starting your sports book now. Sign up your friends, family, get them going on UFC, NASCAR, MLB right around the corner, Korean baseball, Bugali League, or however you pronounce it, Bugandis League. I'm not going to learn how Bundesliga. To pronounce
Bugali. I thought you were trying to say like the Indian Fugazi. I didn't know what you were going.
Bugali, isn't that the meat you get with the Korean barbecue?
That's
I know. Okay. I'm not right. Well,
and Colby, I don't know. Yeah, stay tuned for the interview. I don't know if you want to be the one making fun of me.
There you go.
How to pronounce things. See if you can find that nugget. But of course, make sure you go to aceperhead.com/SGP. aceperhead.com/SGP. Joining us on the line, legendary defensive coordinator for the Virginia Tech Hokies, Bud Foster. Bud, how you taking to retirement so far?
I'm enjoying it. You know, this unfortunately with this pandemic, you know, it's kind of put it in process a little earlier maybe than I wanted to. They had me. I'm an assistant to the athletic director, and I was involved in doing some things with the university and whatnot. Then obviously this thing came on, and so I've been able to transition to that next chapter of my life. And I can say this: I've been busier than in. And it's been, I haven't missed it at all, to be honest with you, but I've transitioned well, and but still looking forward to this next chapter as we move forward. Let me say this. I just hope you and your families have all fared well during all this craziness. It's just unprecedented times. And, you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to everybody that's out there. So, but appreciate y'all having me on the air.
No, and appreciate you calling in. We're fortunate to be all doing well here and staying safe, staying sane. You know, I think as far as your retirement, you are still involved in the program. Has your mind kind of moved forward in the fact that, assuming college football plays as scheduled, that first game where you're going to be sitting on the sidelines, not being able to yell out, you know, calls for the defense, not being able to yell out changes, not being able to like grab some guy by the face mask and really kind of chew him out. You're going to be missing the juice a little bit, right?
You know, I will. And I think because we didn't have spring practice around here, we usually start spring ball after spring break. And that's kind of when everything hit around here. So I didn't get a chance to see that. So really getting a taste of that and really missing it. You know, I missed that, but I do know this. I'm going to be investing for the next few years because I was really involved with recruiting the majority of the defensive kids. We've got a young group still here at Virginia Tech, and I'll be involved in their lives one form or fashion, you know. And I know this, on Saturdays I'll still be invested with them emotionally. It'll be interesting. My Coach Beamer took myself and my wife out for dinner, along with our former D-line coach Charlie Wiles, and my wife did ask Coach Beamer that same question, like, are you able to separate yourself emotionally from the game? He said for the first couple of years it was hard, these last couple, because his group of guys had left. But for me, being involved with Coach Fuente's transition into Tech and then being heavily involved in recruiting, you know, all the defensive kids, I'll still be emotionally tied in, and that'll be hard. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how I handle the game situations when they come back into play.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, speaking from experience, it's now been almost 15 years since I've retired from being on the campus of Virginia Tech. The emotions still range high, and these guys can speak to it every year. I buy in, and I'm super stoked on the team. And then, you know, obviously I want to bring it back to the golden years, because when I was there, that's very much when we were, it felt like the peak for Virginia Tech football. And I wanted to bring you back to that time. And I wanted to kind of zoom in. My last game on campus was the game against Miami, when D'Angelo Hall stripped Roscoe Parrish, took it to the house. We rushed field. And that, to me, that's the most memorable game I have from my time there. I wanted to ask you, if you had to pick one game to say that was the game, would it be from that era?
You know, it would be the 2000s. Obviously, we played for the national championship in 1999. But from 2000 to really 2010, 2011, we went through a stretch there, particularly the mid 2000s, and particularly defensively, we were as good as anybody in football and probably as good statistically as anybody in the history of football. You know, we had in 2006 and 2007, we were number one in the country back to back. We gave up like 10 points a game and 211 yards a game. You know, I know it's a little bit different era with, you know, the fast tempos and things of that nature, but we really had some really dynamic football players on our side of the ball. And, you know, you go back to the Cam Chancellors, the Brandon Flowers, the Vince Hall, Xavier Deeby, who were, you know, first team All-American linebackers and Butkus finalists. And then we had a great defensive line that was probably, you know, we were known more for our DBs and back end, but we were really consistently good up front. That's where it always starts. But that was a great era of Virginia Tech football, and particularly defensively. We just had every time we stepped on the field, I had a lot of confidence knowing that these guys would go out and execute and perform. And not so much for me, but they weren't going to let their brother down. That's when you get that peer pressure and that dynamic going, when guys really give them of themselves to their brother. That really was you knew that that's what they were going to do every day. And that was a comforting feeling from a coaching standpoint, that you were going to get their best play and their best effort every time they stepped on the field.
And I'm glad you brought up Xavier Deeby, because one of the greatest what ifs in my fandom of Virginia Tech is, what if Xavier Deeby does not tear that bicep and continues to shut down Reggie Bush and the what would have been a team playing for the national championship, USC Trojans. I mean, I guess take me back to those guys, like Xavier Deeby, Vince Hall. I feel like as a fan, that was that you talked about reliability. I felt like every game in, game out, you could trust those guys on the field against USC. Did you have a sense of how good Reggie Bush was in that moment, since it was so early in his career?
We did. Well, that was, you know, they were coming off a great year, you know, and obviously had Matt Leinart and you know, those guys coming back. But Xavier, he was a redshirt freshman, so he was playing the first time. And I started a guy in front of him, Donnie Warren's son. Actually, Donnie played several years in the NFL with the Redskins, was a tight end, H-back guy. But Blake was his son, who was a good football player for us. They just had another gear in his speed. And I ended up, so I was going to insert Xavier in there real early and needed to with the speed. And I remember they tried to run a wheel route one time with Reggie, and, you know, Zay covered him man to man, and we forced a sack. And then they hit the same play. Zay tore his bicep a little later in the game, making a play. It was nip tuck ball game. They ended up beating us. It was a close, really close, hard fought football game up at FedEx Field. But that was the difference, in my opinion, was taking Zay out of there. He was a guy that had the speed, an elite player, was very physical. And, you know, it was that was one of the great games. But that was the year 2004. We really didn't know what we were going to be like. We ended up going into the ACC that year. We had those guys, you're talking Vince and Zay, were redshirt freshmen who went on to be four-year starters for us. But later on that year, we won the ACC and beat Miami down at Miami in the Orange Bowl, you know, and it came down to us and them that first year in 2004, and we beat them down there 16-10 with just a great defensive performance. But those guys were two of the great football players in my era. They really complemented each other very well. Zay had speed and great athleticism, and he went on to play, you know, 5 years in the NFL. And then Vince Hall might have been maybe my best football player ever. Just very instinctive, you know, a coach on the field, very played great anticipating football as opposed to reactive football, and just was a dynamic football player. And those guys complimented each other very, very well. We're playmakers for us for 4 years in a row.
And you guys always seem to have I feel like those Miami teams were loaded, but you guys were kind of a thorn in the side of those Miami teams. But one of my favorite wins also was at Columbus. I know that wasn't traditionally, I don't think that was in the early 2000s. That was like 4 or 5 years ago.
It was a bit later.
But that ruined their national title hopes. Or no, they still made the playoffs, I think. But that,
well, they won it that year, but that was a big win for us, you know. And I was hoping that the only bad part about that year We did not capitalize on that game like we needed to, you know, and that was the only drawback of that year. I think that season we might've, you know, we might've went 7-5, that type of thing, but really, you know, we defensively were pretty good. We struggled offensively that year, but, that was a great win to go up in the horseshoe and the way we played. And, you know, you have moments where when you're calling plays, whether it's offensively or defensively, you know, you're kind of rolling sevens. And that was one of those, we put all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak, with this particular scheme. They had, the Bear kid came in and, lock here. They had their big time quarterback.
That was not Terrell Pryor. That was afterwards. It was it wasn't Cardale Jones, because Cardale Jones was Terrell Pryor, right?
No, it was their athletic guy.
Oh, Braxton Miller.
Thank you. I had a brain lock right there. But we designed this scheme to really get the ball out of the perimeter and really wanted to keep the quarterback in a phone booth. You know, they were into the power read stuff and really, you know, they wanted to spread you out, but it was really a run offense mentality. And we wanted to keep it in a phone booth and really kind of take it off the perimeter. And even though we were going to keep it in his hands, we felt like we could keep him in a phone booth. And that's kind of what we did with that game plan. It was a good win for us. It didn't, you know, they rebounded. They had a really talented football team, ended up going on and winning the national championship that year. But, we had a lot of those games over the course of my career at Virginia Tech. We lost some games in bowl games that I felt like if we'd have won those games, that would have catapulted us to the next level. You know, we lost to an Auburn team one year in 2004. We went out and lost to Auburn in the Sugar Bowl 16-13, which, you know, they had a bunch of really good players, you know, and we lost to Georgia in a close ball game in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. Kansas, when they were really, really good, we lost to them 24-21 in the Orange Bowl. And, we played really good defense in both of those games. We turned it over. But those were the games we felt like needed to catapult us to that next step. You know, being, you know, a top five, top elite team that they're talking about national championship, you know, for the next season. And those were games that we needed to kind of, in my opinion, you know, we needed to win a few of those games, you know. We had some great wins and took the program to heights that never been and seen before. And I think they're getting ready to get back to that level of play again under Coach Fuente. You know, I really like the group that they've recruited and the young kids they have, particularly on defense. They have some athletes on offense, particularly quarterback. And, you know, that's where it starts. And in our time, you were talking, obviously we had the Tyrod Taylor, the Mike Vicks, Brian Randall stretch through there. That obviously when you have that trigger, man, that helps you.
Yeah,
put you in position to win a lot of football games.
And you touched on one of the proud things that I wear on my cap as a Hokie is the fact that we schedule hard. We always have that degree of difficulty ratcheted up when you're opening the season against an Ohio State and against an Alabama, against a USC. And you've had the privilege both with those games and within your own conference to face some of the most complex, difficult, and different offenses out there, whether it be the triple option, the pro style with studs all over the field at Miami, Rich Rod speed option. Which style of offense kept you up at night the longest?
You know, they all had their own ways of and being, you know, demonic to me to a degree, but I tell you what, the guy that was, we had some great battles and that probably gave me the most upset stomach was Paul Johnson when he was at Georgia Tech. And, Paul had seen it so many different schemes thrown at him with that offense. And it's really pretty simple, but as we kind of really played them very well. I think we played them 10 years and we were 7-3 against them. And they were always close games, but it was a chess match. And every year he schemed a new blocking scheme or a new way to do things. And it just made us always work to make adjustments. And I always felt like maybe that was the one thing that we did as well as anybody throughout that stretch in my time. We had just we had a good staff, but we were able to make adjustments during the course of the game. Our kids did a great job of working the game, you know, to do those kind of things, because you're always, that's kind of where you earn your check, and, you know, and is making those adjustments. And hopefully you have experience enough that those kids can go ahead and do that. You know, some guys are learning with reps guys, and we were fortunate enough to have a lot of guys with a good football IQ that were able to make adjustments. But I would say Paul was probably the guy at Georgia Tech when he was, when they were in their heyday, as of, they really had some really good players, particularly guys at quarterback. They gave me a, you know, it was a 4-hour stomach ache. I can tell you that.
Worst week of the year is Georgia Tech week. Cause you know, some guys are going to get hurt, and you know, they're going to just, I hated it too, coach. I'm with you.
You know, that's just such a, you know, you can, as far as defending the option, I mean, everybody can do that. It's the hard part about that offense and some offenses as a scout, as is getting your scout team to simulate the speed and the tempo. And even with these, you know, the up tempo, you know, widespread, you know, open, you know, air raid offense, whatever you want to call it, getting your scout team to simulate the plays and simulate the tempo and the accuracy of the passing game or the blocking schemes and those kind of things. That's the hard part. That's the challenge. And that's kind of what was the hardest part with that offense, was simulating the speed and that, and the cut blocking. We obviously didn't want to do that in practice to risk injury, but you also had to do some things to prepare yourself and prepare your kids for that.
And one of my, not to just make this all about a Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech podcast, but one of my favorite things that, not just with Georgia Tech, the brand of cornerback play was very physical. It was very much a little ahead of its time, even in the tackling that's asked of the cornerbacks of Virginia Tech. My favorite game plan ever against Georgia Tech is when you put Kyle Fuller on the line of scrimmage and he just destroyed, created the massive havoc. And I say all of that to say, I think one of the cool things that we're seeing now in the NFL, we're seeing a lot of these like big three safety stack type lines that, to me, I don't want to give you all the credit here, coach, but it feels a lot like the Rover whip situation that you've been rolling out in Blacksburg since the late 90s.
Well, yeah. And that's the one thing I always felt like we were able to do is, as we've always adjusted to, I think, the style of offense that was coming around. Now, obviously you throw Georgia Tech out now, that was a different animal, but you know, as the games has evolved, I think the one thing that we've been able to do is we were able to attract and recruit kids that could really run. So we've been in a, you know, we've been in a nickel kind of defense for a long, long time, you know, meaning like a 4-2-5 type concept, and having our whip linebacker or our Rover or, you know, our, besides having two corners that were, and that's kind of what we, you know, I'll battle anybody with DBU. You know, we kind of throw that around. I know Florida and I think LSU and us kind of claim that, maybe Ohio State even too. But as far as the number of guys drafted and played in the league and that type of thing. But, you know, we went through a stretch where all five of our guys could cover and could all, and also needed to tackle, because we were going to spill the ball. They were going to be our free hitters. So those guys need to be extremely versatile. And I do think that's what the NFL liked about our guys, is they could cover, they could run. They had a good football IQ. They knew how to work. They knew how to be team first football players. But then they were very physical, and that's a big, big part of, you know, playing at that next level. And, you know, they were just the complete football player, the complete team player. And I think that's why the NFL liked our guys, is they had that lunch pail mentality, but also, you know, they knew how to work and compete and go to work every day and be a team player. And I think that was a big part of our success with that back end. And those guys really cherished that mentality of that DBU mantra, so to speak. And you know, it's carried on a great tradition for us.
I think another area where the NFL certainly liked the Virginia Tech defensive player is because they were often featured on special teams. I got to ask you, I know you coached the special teams down there in Blacksburg a little bit. Who was the originator of the starters are going to play on special teams for us? Because to me, you know, that was the greatest edge that we had. We were way ahead of, I mean, I know like this is the legendary stories of other coaches coming to Blacksburg to learn how to do special teams. But really to me, it was all about getting the best players on the field, gaining that edge. Where did that come from?
You know, that was driven by Coach Beamer, you know, and when I was a young coach, he gave me responsibility of being the special teams coordinator. But he was also a guy when I played a couple of years for him at Murray State. He was my defensive coordinator, and Mike Godfrey was our head football coach at the time, and Ron Zook was my position coach. That was a I had a pretty good
that's crazy. Yeah.
But coach came in, and he was ahead of his time defensively, you know, as well from a blitz mentality. But then he was also ahead of the game from a special team standpoint. And obviously when we came to Virginia Tech, we weren't as deep. We were hit with several years of probation from the previous staff, and really to compete at the level we needed to compete at, you know, we needed to put our starters on those. We didn't have enough quality depth to play those guys. And that's just really kind of where it started. And we really felt like, you know, the special teams, you're talking about such a big field distribution, you know, change of field strength as far as where the ball, you know, the offense is going to take over defense, where you can pin people back, whatever, whatnot, you know, the return game, blocking kicks, that type of thing. You know, coach was a big, big part of that. And making sure that we had to win that phase of the game. We were going to win offense, defense, but particularly we were going to win. He felt like if we could win defensively and win on special teams and then play opportunistic offense, that we have a chance to win every game right there. And, we led the country for years in block kicks and punts and field goals and that type of thing. And those were game changers for us. And were a big part of, you know, our success at Virginia Tech, and which what created Beamer Ball at Virginia Tech.
Now, you mentioned lunch pail there, and I don't know if everyone realizes, but you guys actually have a tradition of having the lunch pail on the sideline. It's kind of worked into your prep for the week. What was the genesis of that tradition, and is it going to keep going on even after you've retired?
You know, thank you. The lunch pail, I started that when I became the coordinator in 95, and we just wanted a symbol that what was going to separate Virginia Tech from who we were, from our opponents, you know. And really what the lunch, obviously everybody understands the lunch pail is about hard work, but really it's about that commitment, the accountability, the loyalty, the trust. The responsibility to do it every day, to have the discipline to come to work and out prepare your opponent every day. And it just not was our players, it was our staff the same way. But we gave our players, we evaluate our players every day. And we've kind of over the years given it to, like during spring practice or fall camp, we would give it to the player of the day. And then our player of the game really was responsible for the lunch pail. But then with the lunch pail inside of it, we put mission statements, we put goals. We've done different things over the years. You know, Clemson and Florida State, they're known for their turf games. Every game for us, when we were in the ACC up until here recently, we were the winningest team on the road. And we felt like every game was a turf game. So after every game that we won on the road, we would take a piece of sod and put it in the lunch pail, you know.
Oh,
so
nice.
But that's really, you know, our player of the game, they were responsible for taking it to practice. If we were on the road, they were responsible for taking it on the road, you know, had that type of thing. But that, if you were the keeper of the pail, you were kind of that was one of the most honorable things you could have at Virginia Tech at the time, you know? And, so it just became a brand for us more than it was, as much as it was a symbol, you know. And you know, everybody across the country, anytime we were on TV, they show the lunch pail, or they want to know who was carrying the pail, who was going to bring it out as we ran through the tunnel, that type of thing. But it was a great symbol for us, putting their goals in there and signing off on a mission statement. You could hold guys accountable for their work ethic and that type of thing and their commitment and having the discipline to do that. So it ended up being a big time brand for us, but a great symbol of who we were and why we had our success.
Well, I'm glad to now, see. Oh, what's that?
Yeah, to go back to it though, you know, we're basically, they're kind of retiring that with me, you know, it's all said and done. Now, you know, Coach Fuente's been a guy that's really has understood the tradition at Virginia Tech. He is, uh, he's kept 25. Coach Beamer was number 25 when he played at Virginia Tech, and they honor a player every week to wear number 25. And usually it's somebody that's involved in special teams, and they've kind of honored the lunch pail with a hard hat mentality right now. It's kind of what their new approach is, and, you know, kind of letting the lunch pail, you know, it's going to be there, always will be a part of Virginia Tech, but you're going to see it more in the trophy case than you're going to see it on the sideline, which I'm fine with that. I get all that. But the lunch pail will always be a part of Virginia Tech and Virginia Tech's, you know, success.
New defensive coordinator coming in is Justin Hamilton. You not only coach Justin Hamilton, but you've also been on the sidelines with Justin. How do you think he will fare? And are you excited to see him, take off as defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I feel real good about Justin. You know, he was an outstanding player for us. He came in as a highly recruited running back, but he played behind Kevin Jones and Lee Suggs. And, you know, Kevin went on to be a first round draft pick. And Justin was the ultimate team guy. He played running back. He played like slot receiver for us. Then his senior year, I got him to come over and play defense for me during we do our early morning workouts and stuff like that in the winter. And he was a guy that was a big kid that had really good feet that could transition well out of what defensive backs need to do. And I felt like he'd be a great fit for us. And he ended up having a great year, got drafted, played a couple of years in the NFL, then got into coaching. When I made my announcement and, you know, Coach Fu said, "Hey, we don't have to do anything now, but keep in mind who you may want, you know, could come in here and do this and be a guy that could, run our defense and whatnot." And after a while I said, "Hey," and I went down to Food and I said, "You know, we've got the guy, he's right underneath our nose. You know, I think he understands the tradition of Virginia Tech, understands the history of the defense, and he loves this program. He was probably one of the most unselfish team first guys we've ever had. I think he's got a tremendous football IQ, and he's a great communicator, great motivator. I think he was he's a great hire, you know, and I recommended him to, you know, the Foo. We had Jerry Kill. If you guys remember Jerry Kill, Jerry was at Minnesota and
Northern Illinois, right?
Yeah. And did a great job at Northern. He's one of the great football coaches. I think he is just a football guy. Jerry came and was a consultant with us. And I told him, I said the same thing to him. I said, "Just watch this guy. And you think if I'm, you know, you feel the same way I do." And he did. That's kind of when I went in and talked to Foo about Justin. And, you know, it was right after the season that after our Virginia game that he called me and said he was going to name Justin the coordinator, which really excited me for the program and really excited me for Justin. But I think the defense is going to be in great hands, you know, under his direction.
Now you're at Virginia Tech, or still are in a different capacity, for over 30 years. Pretty unique to kind of see that loyalty to a program, certainly in college football right now. How close did you ever come to either taking a job in the pros, taking a job as a head coach in college? Did you just hate offense and couldn't imagine yourself coaching offense as well? How close did you come to leaving that role as defensive
coach? Don't say it was Clemson.
No, you know what? I will say this. You know, I was a finalist for a couple jobs. I wanted a Power Five job as a head coach. You know, I was a finalist for a couple jobs. I was very selective. I had some opportunities to go to some, you know, Conference USA or MAC or even 1AA jobs, but that was in the prime of Virginia Tech. And we were playing on Thursday, but it seemed like we were Thursday's darling for ESPN, but we were playing on New Year's Day bowl games, and those, you know, would be New Year's Six now, but, you know, we were playing in those games on a regular basis. I felt like I wanted to compete at the highest level. The jobs that I really looked into, had a really good shot at was Virginia. They hired Al Groh, and then was Clemson. It was down to me and Dabo, you know, and they hired Dabo. I had plenty of opportunities to go as a coordinator. You know, Kevin Sumlin offered me a job a couple times. Steve Spurrier offered me a job a couple times. Mark Richt offered me a job a couple times. And probably the closest I came maybe was with Kevin the second time around at Texas A&M. But he was just an intriguing guy, what he was doing offensively, and I know the history of Texas A&M as well, and you know, with their defense over the years, and it was just you know, that was probably the one that I was most intrigued with when it was all said and done.
Well, speaking for all the alumni, we appreciate you staying all these years, because I will say, as a fan of a college football team that has never seen the highest level of success in the form of a national championship, it was always cool to just be able to rely on the same system year in, year out. It was a formula that works. It was a formula you could trust. And I gotta be honest, like my friends I went to college with, we all had kind of convinced ourselves that you just liked Blacksburg, Virginia too much. You didn't want to leave. What was it about Blacksburg, or was it purely just you never saw the right fit anywhere else?
Well, that's a good question. I think there was a combination of things. Number one, I was working for the best guy in the business. You know, you mentioned we played for a national championship. We got beat by Chris Winkie and Peter Warwick and that crew at Florida State when we were in the old Big East. But if we'd have won a national championship, just because of who Frank Beamer is and the kind of person he is, how well he's thought of in the profession, that would have catapulted Virginia Tech to another level, as well as Frank Beamer. You know, he was just inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame 2 years ago, 2018. He was a big part of why I stayed at Virginia Tech. You know, he took care of me financially. I had a 5-year rollover contract, you know, that was as good as any head football coach's contract. That was a big part of me staying. I mean, I wasn't the highest paid guy, but I probably had the best contract in the business. And coach was always looking out for his assistants. You know, that's the one thing he made. We had a lot of guys that stayed for a number of years, you know, at Virginia Tech. And then I will say this, Blacksburg is a great college town. Football is king. And they rebel football coaches for whatever reason. But I was fortunate. I raised a family here. We rooted ourselves in. And, you know, and I'm a guy that I like my life outside of football, too. And quality of life for me was important. And we were, like you said, we were winning at the highest level. We were competing at the highest level. We were a top 10 football program for about 20 straight years. And, you know, we were in a position to, we were playing at the highest level, but also had a good quality of life. And that to me was important. I didn't feel like and I got into this business, if I was going to be a nomad, I don't know if I would be able to laugh like some guys do, you know. And I was just very fortunate and blessed to work for a great guy, and then had a great quality of life outside of football. And that combination, you know, the grass wasn't always greener on the other side, I guess, was what I'm saying. So that made it pretty special here.
Well, you talk about a special place, Blacksburg, Virginia. I'm really jealous when I look this up about you, that you actually have a drink named after you, the Bud Foster. You can get it at the Hyatt Place in Blacksburg. How many drinks do you have to order before they name one after you?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I should. I don't know if I can say it. I mean, I'm such a fan of Tito's. I've had people say that I should be somehow get some royalties from those guys. But that's some of the things that I've been able to do. Obviously I've done some commercials around the area. The people at the Hyatt Place there, they've done several things within the community and some businesses. And I've been a part of, you know, doing some things for them as a spokesperson. And so it's kind of neat. One of the bartenders there that, kind of created this concoction for me, and that's, I said, what are you gonna name? So let's name it the Bud Foster. So now it's become a popular drink. So, you know, with Coach Beamer, they name a street after him. For me, they name a drink. You know? So we'll see. I guess that goes to, you know, that's kind of what the defensive guys are kind of like. You kind of think of those guys maybe as rugged, kind of those kind of guys, and maybe that's what makes, that's an honorable way to recognize me with that way. So that's pretty cool.
Now, coach, I know Beamer's in the College Football Hall of Fame. There's never been an assistant coach in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's lobbied for you to get there. We all believe that you should be there, as that we know you as the best defensive coordinator in football the past 30 years. So let's get you in this Hall of Fame, man.
Well, I appreciate that. I do think, and you guys recognizing me, and there's so many guys that I looked up to that are deserving as well, and have, assistants in this game for years. You know, the head coaches probably get too much of the credit and get too much of the blame, you know, when it's all said and done, because the guys that do a lot of the work are the assistant coaches and in particular the coordinators, you know, and they're the guys that stay up late designing the game plan and doing those things and making the calls and living every, I know for me, I lived every play through those guys, every call I made. And that, you know, that took its emotional and physical toll on me over time, you know, I think assistant coaches deserve to be recognized besides the head coaches in this thing. They make as big an impact, if not more of an impact, on, because they're on the day to day front, so to speak, than some of the head coaches. So many of the head coaches are CEOs and that type of thing now. And you've got your frontline guys, so to speak, are your assistant coaches, and the guys that are career assistant coaches, you know, they make a tremendous impact on the game and make a tremendous impact on young people's lives. And I think they deserve to be recognized in some form or fashion.
Well, awesome catching up with you, bud, and appreciate you calling in. Make sure you check out Bud Foster on Twitter at Coach Foster VT, and enjoy your retirement and your continued work with Virginia Tech.
Go Hokies.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. It's fun to be heard out in the Cali area in LA. I know I'm excited about the Chargers going up to LA, because I'm looking forward to my man Tyrod Taylor. He's a really talented football player, and I know they drafted the number one quarterback out of number one pick out of Oregon, and I hope they give Tyrod a shot, because he is a dynamic athlete. And then we have Brandon Faison, who's playing corner there for the Chargers as well. He had a great year for him last year, and it's going to be a breakout year for him. And so I'm excited for those guys and the LA fans to see those guys play in that area. So my shout out to those guys, but thank you guys so much for having me on the air.
Well, appreciate coach, it. when you come out for that game to see Tyrod, you let me know. Drinks on me.
I'll do it. I'm going to do that. So count on that. Be careful what you ask for.
Tito's on the house. Thanks again, Coach Foster. And yeah, have a great week. Awesome time talking to a new friend of the program, Bud Foster. Kramer, you know what else is awesome? Another new friend, Cushy Dreams. That's right. They're a new full lineup of premium smokable CBD. I hit one of their, they do some pre-rolls and they, the different types of CBD for different types of stuff you're going for. I hit the Peace CBD. Nice little mellow vibe. And then I hit the Creative CBD pre-roll. Really enjoyed that. Shipping legally to all 50 states. And if you don't want to do the vapes, the gummies, you want that kind of old school smoking experience. It's interesting, because it smells like weed. It looks like weed, but it's the CBD experience. Kramer, I know you're dealing with some back pain.
And you know, I am a Sherpa, you might say, for folks getting over to the light, seeing the light of CBD,
the original medicine man.
I think one of the things with CBD that people get thrown off is they cannot separate the idea of being high. And with this stuff, to your point, Sean, there's some muscle memory being tricked there, but man, what a relief. I'm dealing with some serious back pain. Sean, I don't know if you see me right now, but I'm moving around.
Yeah.
Not what 24 hours ago I couldn't even walk.
Yeah. Sometimes Kramer would be doing the Larry Bird where he just lays down on the floor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know,
Steve Nash for the younger Steve audience. Nash.
There you go.
That 47 yard field goal, Sean.
Yeah, huh? I know. The under is looking great on that. And of course,
can I say my favorite part though? A quality pre-roll. Now, one of the things with pre-rolls, if you're not familiar with them, is, you know, just like anything else, there's low quality stuff, the kind where like you turn it upside down and a bunch of shake falls out. This was a nice roll. And Sean, I also sampled the flower itself, not pre-roll. I took out, you know what I did, Sean? I took out the grinder, old school. I had a bit of a throwback moment, and I even filled up the water piece, And again,
CBD water pipe.
I will say this too, for folks who just like that feeling, that little bit of that burn in the throat, it gives you that same thing. And this, as far as the CBD, I've often found that taking the CBD without THC isn't as effective, but with this stuff, it was awesome. I would say like 10 out of, and guess what? Guess what, kids? Unlike Advil or Aleve or these non-steroidal pain relief medicines, this stuff will not tear up your stomach.
Exactly.
Don't listen to Big Pharma, bro.
And of course, if you go to cushydreams.com, use a promo code SGP, get 15% off. KUSHYdreams.com, promo code SGP. Although in the copy they say spell it out just in case, but I feel like hashtag DGens only are very familiar with how to spell Kush. But just in case, there you go, cushydreams.com.
They know how to spell Kush. They know how to organize the numbers 420 and 6 and 9. That's
you can tell by our Madden Mayhem chats. A lot of guys, and a lot of times they have to do 420 69. And then like 369s because someone else already has 420 69 locked down. We're coming to the end of Madden Mayhem. It's an emotional time. We got 8 games left. And it's been a pretty exciting tournament. Before we get to that and give out our picks, breaking news on the Sports Wire, courtesy of the NewYorkPost.com, of course, DeAndre Baker, a Giants cornerback, he's gotten into some trouble, was accused of an armed robbery.
Are the charges dropped yet?
The charges have not been dropped yet. And wait, who's the other guy he was with?
The Seahawks player, right?
Yeah. Dunbar.
Dunbar. There you go. And it's a perfect time to bring this up. So his attorney is saying that he went over there to the party and he brought his Madden controllers and his Madden console and just sat in another room, didn't take place in the party, and was just hanging out there playing Madden. And that there was, although they also said he was wagering on the outcome of the Madden contest.
Well, now wait a second.
Yes, exactly.
Was he calling it Madden Mayhem?
And then
because
that's
now I'd have a problem. But you know what, Sean? Legends only. Are you gonna take the word of those felons, those thugs, those hood rats over the upstanding first round pick out of the great University of Georgia, DeAndre Baker? I didn't think so. Don't be reckless here with your reporting, Sean. Drop this just like the charges and we can move on with our lives.
Now, there were accusations that he lost $70,000 while gambling.
Ooh, on Madden.
And was playing dice. But now he says, his attorney says that's not true, although he did withdraw $1,500 in cash. And so we'll see how this shakes out. But what's going to happen is the attorney is trying to get basically proof that he was logged in playing his Madden games while this incident occurred, providing an airtight alibi for DeAndre Baker. And I just want to throw this out to the people. If you're watching Madden Mayhem and you're involved in the Madden Mayhem chat room, you are providing yourself with an alibi. So again, if you need to prove your whereabouts.
So what did we learn? Keep your cell phone at home. And watch Madden Mayhem to establish an alibi.
There you go.
Yes.
Time and a place. Ah,
that went a different place. I thought you were going to come after him, but yeah, no, I mean, it's, by the way, if you've actually read about it, it does sound like there's some extortion going on with some of the characters here.
Well, and it's pretty funny. And they were talking about it. I forget what podcast I was listening to, but the police reported it was like $60,000 watch missing, $60,000 watch missing. And then one guy had a knockoff watch at $600 value. That's gotta be pretty embarrassing. Everyone's like, oh, didn't you lost your Rolex.
That's the worst way to be found out, Sean.
Exactly. Snatch and change. Really probably what happened. There was some gambling, an incident, someone robbed someone. We'll see what Baker's involvement is, Kramer. It's not looking great for the first round pick, but
no
again,
one had a problem when Jordan was telling people to fuck off. Good luck collecting.
No, I think a lot of people did, and that's including the Russian mafia,
allegedly.
But again, one way or the other. He's gonna have experience. Let me just redo my joke of he's gonna be experienced one way or the other. appearing in front of a judge, like Joe Judge, the head coach.
I'll tell you that I'd much rather watch a 10-part documentary of what went on in that household than The Last Dance.
Stop it.
Okay, right? Colby, we need to take a quick. Colby, that documentary was awesome.
Garbage.
Wow. I think you're in the minority.
Garbage. Smear campaign.
Well, a smear campaign for what? And I tweeted
to make him look like God.
I tweeted it out. And I don't know if you clicked on it because it flies in the face of your theory that Jordan should have been called for that offensive foul at the end of,
I was talking about it all this morning.
Did you watch in that same exact playoff, the shove off that Reggie Miller had on Michael Jordan that was not called at all?
Well, that was one of the best moments ever for us Jordan haters, that cause he did a Jordan play to Jordan.
And he didn't get called for it. What I'm saying is that shows that the refs in the 1998 playoffs weren't calling offensive fouls at the end of the game. And that was my point.
I guess here's my problem though, is that Reggie Miller goes vocal, goes to the media saying that, hey, I pushed off him. Right. And then Jordan to this day still says, I didn't push off Brian Russell.
Well, and if
can I say something controversial?
Sure. Get in there.
I don't think he pushed him off that much.
If I have a kid and they ask me what's an offensive foul, that is the perfect definition of an offensive foul.
Did you watch the reverse angle? And did you see Bob Costas, one of the greatest sports broadcasters of all time?
Don't even start with me on Costas.
You don't like
Can't
Bob
even
Costas?
Say Redskins. Good God.
Hold on.
The biggest Jordan dick rider ever.
No, but that would be a moderate
shot. But here's the thing.
I don't know him and Costas. It's
Ahmad Rashad like only has a career because he was pulling.
He was a wide receiver in the NFL.
He's pulling.
What are you talking about?
But he only establishes that height of being a broadcaster because he's inside of Michael Jordan's.
But at least
circle.
He's a former athlete.
Yeah.
Bob Costas is some little snot.
Okay. Oh, I mean, arguably the greatest baseball.
Oh, don't you guys are Costas okay, here we guys?
Go. No, I'm not even a Costas guy. No, I'm not even a Jordan guy, but he didn't push off there, Colby.
What?
Get off that horse.
Get the fuck out of here right now. That is a push off. That is the definition of a push off. He's my number one player all time.
That is an
offensive foul to the highest degree.
You can't both be angry that the league is soft today and then want a soft call back when the league was hard.
Great point, Kramer.
I can do this. Jordan played by a different set of rules than almost everybody.
But regardless of whatever you want to talk about, the fact that he did what he did, and I'll be the first to tell you, whether it was convenience, whether he got his father killed, whether he was suspended, the rest that
I don't mean to laugh at that.
Those 18 months off from the court definitely helped him. But if you just look at going through the run that he went through as a human being and not being tired to the point of not doing it. I think whatever you think of Jordan, the athlete, whatever you think of where he ranks,
he's still my number one basketball player
in
ever.
The pantheon. I think that documentary shows you one thing. If you work hard, good shit will happen.
And he lied about the flu.
Well, let's get into that.
Well, hold on.
Cause
hold
Colby
on.
Has no,
But it seems like Colby is trying to cherry pick these things as to why Jordan was getting preferential treatment.
Well, David Stern, just David Stern's the worst commissioner ever. And he built this whole thing on stars. Let's break down.
Let's unpack this onion that is your hate of things that are successful. If Jordan is not given preferential
treatment, but I still say Jordan's the best player
ever.
It's much more fair.
Jordan doesn't rise to the level that he rises to. The game doesn't turn into a global game. And
I'm okay with it not being a global game because it's gotten worse being global.
But that's what I'm talking about. You're the guy who liked Family Guy before it was popular. And now you hate Family Guy because it's popular.
So like when the band gets popular.
And I think in the case of Jordan, to say this documentary was a little shallow at points is very fair. To say it was a shit documentary, come on, man.
Let me explain myself.
Light years ahead of their time.
Let me explain myself.
They were doing stuff that it took decades to have that kind of access behind the scenes. And if you want to talk about the reason that Jordan, however you want to feel about him, the reason Jordan's greatness is beyond that we'll ever see again.
Yeah.
It's because he had the foresight to see that, to know that he has control. You know why it helps? You know why this documentary didn't go into the gambling thing too far? Because he had control.
Which is why you should never take the documentary that seriously, because, you know, his ego's on the moon. You can already tell that by him lying about the flu game and everything else. But hold on. Look, my main point here is this. Look, I know he's the best basketball player ever. I argue that all the time. He's better than LeBron, right? It's just he shit on my team year after year.
Which team was that?
The Knicks.
Okay.
Right? Year after year. And then to me, the fatal blow is that I'm sports deprived, and then they got to release a 10 part series to fucking make me go through the misery for 10 hours again. It was, look, some of it was fun.
Real quick to Jordan's greatness, that little trivia that they had in the doc, he eliminated 20 Hall of Famers over his course in the playoffs, 20 different times. The Hall of Famer he eliminated the most, Patrick Ewing, 4 separate times.
Well, and what's funny is I also grew up a Knicks fan.
Yeah.
And I would argue, based on my age, and really not like I kind of became of age to start remembering stuff as the Giants won their second of those Super Bowls. They went into the Ray Hanley days of sucking. Belichick gone.
I remember.
The Yankees, Jeter and the boys hadn't shown up yet. So really, not only
the Rangers,
I was a Devils fan. Oh. So they were actually quite
Jersey
good.
Trash. I know they were good though.
The Knicks were the team. And when I tell people like the Knicks were the team of the town by a mile, it wasn't even close. Even when the Giants were winning Super Bowls, I don't have that hatred. Like I grew up not hating Jordan. I grew up hating Reggie Miller. The Pacers were the team I hated.
That's weird.
Not the Bulls.
I mean, I hated the Pacers too, but I ended up gaining. I mean, my thing is this, look, Jordan is
anyway,
the best ever.
Colby, we can't have one of your,
a lot. Let's do 6 hours, guys. We just got a lot of calls and it made me, and just the way Stern catered to him just was so annoying to me, more than any athlete I've ever recalled in sports, and a commissioner going out of his way to really butter up a player.
But it was the right move.
No, he's a piece of shit. Not Jordan, but Stern.
But
Jordan probably too, though.
Colby, you would be the only person to say that David Stern left the NBA worse off than he found it.
No, there's lots. True basketball fans out there.
No.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're stopping this conversation because that's silly. Let's move on to Madden Mayhem.
Quick note about the flu game. The
league would have folded if David Stern didn't show up.
No.
Period. It's
cable television was happening. It was a perfect storm.
The part fired. that really got to me or just made no sense was he orders a pizza
and eats the whole thing.
Eats the whole pizza. The shot of his best friend, that character.
That guy
is not having a slice of pizza. If you're on the road and you're in a hotel room, there's 5 dudes in a hotel room. Yeah. Not one other dude, not that like overweight security guard that he's best friends with. Supposedly you're telling me that guy doesn't have one slice.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it, man.
I'll tell you why. You know, with kids, the number one way you can tell they're lying is when there's too much detail. And when you don't, when you tell me a story and then you go out of your way to say, and I ate the whole pizza by myself.
Red flag.
You know what I say when I eat a lot of pizza? I ate way too much pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what happens when I order a pizza, eat the whole thing by myself? I ate a lot of pizza. Not, and I ate the whole thing.
Yeah. No one
by
had,
myself.
No yeah. one had the other pizza. It's like
I will say this though. It's probably a good thing Jordan beat those Utah teams because I cannot stand Karl Malone.
What's funny is that
I cannot stand Karl Malone.
Yeah, you want to talk about? I mean, if you really go digging, I think possibly weirdly more dirt on Karl Malone than Michael Jordan.
Yes, I think so. I think definitely so.
Depending on what your definition of dirt is.
I mean, yeah. What kind of dirty deeds did he do to be accepted in Utah? you want to talk about the reason that Jordan kept his kids at home? That was a hostile. Yeah. That felt like there was about to be some shit going down, like the Chappelle joke, right? Like
911.
Yeah. I mean, look up Karl Malone. I don't know the entire story, but Karl Malone, 13-year-old girl. Do yourself a favor, Google
and
that.
And the child that becomes an NFL player.
Wild.
Well, not just that. I mean, he also has some interesting takes on homosexuality and other in other areas of the world, which
is very old school.
Again, look at those Utah crowds. Look at that Utah team. Somehow they were really stoked on Karl Malone. there's a lot of weird shit with the NBA back.
He's one of the good ones, according to the Utah Jazz fans. All right, let's get to it. Let's start ripping through these Madden Mayhem picks. Kramer, Get us the lines.
So of course we are looking at the Elite Eight. We are talking about a situation where it's no longer about your seeding. We're outside of the division. So these are all division champs. Point differential is the indicator. First game up Thursday, this Thursday, May 21st, 8 PM on the East Coast, 5 PM on the West Coast, the Kansas City Chiefs. They're at home. They have the point differential. I didn't actually write it down, Sean. I apologize.
It's fine.
They're hosting the Bills, where they will be an 8-point favorite, minus 450 on the money line, plus 250 for the Bills. 48.5 is the total. One other thing to note here, the futures, Sean, Chiefs plus 200 only, massive favorite. The Bills still 10-1. And all along the way, Sean, I feel like we've pointed out that this team has had value. They have the formula, right? They have good skill positions. They play good defense, and they have the quarterback that's willing to run almost to a fault. They've kind of had to work some miracles.
I know
both
you have
games.
Him in the Super Bowl, so I understand what you're doing to us.
They won a game without scoring an offensive touchdown.
They should have lost both games, probably.
Truly mayhem. Kramer, we'll give you. I'll give you first pick on this one. Which way are you going?
I mean, I've got to take. I've got. I mean, I almost want to sit at the bargaining. I'll take the Bills. Yeah. I mean,
I'm fine with the Chiefs minus 8. The Chiefs defense actually played pretty good against the Raiders. They played bad the first game. They showed up against the Raiders. Maybe that's more just about how
I was about to say
how bad Derek Carr is. But I'll take the Chiefs minus 8. This Buffalo Bills team has been getting by the skin of their teeth. So I think they're due for some regression, and they're going to fall apart. Chiefs roll.
I think Bud Foster would tell you any defense will look good if your quarterback's missing your target by 10 yards.
But isn't that the other side of the coin? They haven't really played their best game, and they've won. No, granted, they haven't really. I mean, they played the Dolphins and the Jets, so we will see a slight uptick in competition. But the Raiders aren't exactly a good team.
I'll take the 8. I'll take the 8 points. I think that's
of course
the play,
you're
right?
going to take the 8 points.
But I have the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So,
but I was going to say I'll go. I think either way you slice it, the team coming out of this game to me is the team I'm looking to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl.
Really? It's a bold claim, Kramer.
Well, I mean, there's only two. There's only two AFC games left. But yeah, I do, and I would go as far. I wish I had yards against. But if I had to guess, the Bills' passing defense is the strength. I feel like we saw them struggle a little bit with the running attack of Miami. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think the Bills shocked the world here, Sean. No one circles the wagons quite like them, or so I've been told. Man, that'd be great. We need to get Chris Berman to do a highlight. What would it cost to get him to do a highlight package?
I don't know. Is he on Cameo? I feel like he probably is.
The nightcap Thursday, May 21st, 10 PM on the East Coast, 7 PM on the West Coast. The Chicago Bears head to New Orleans to take on the Saints, where the Saints are minus 6, minus 325 on the money line. Bears plus 200, 47.5 is the total. The Bears have kind of been slowly gaining respect on the back of that defense. Of course, Khalil Mack absolutely shredding last game with a pick six, multiple sacks, tackles for a loss. But the Saints have just kind of done their thing. If you look at the futures, the Saints and the Chiefs, odds on favorites to be representing their conferences at plus 200 for the Chiefs and plus 240 for the Saints.
Not going to happen.
Bears, for the same reasons that the Bills, a bit of value, perhaps some value here with the Bears as well. Although if you're looking at the Bears plus 800, you're almost better just with a mechanical parlay, taking the plus 200 here they have three games left.
Who's the best player in the game?
Mitch Vick.
And hell, if you're fading Mitch Vick when they have Khalil Mack and all those other great defenders, Fuller had a pick six.
They're great at getting turnovers. I'm taking the Bears plus 6. Give me them all day. If they end up losing, I still think it's a close game. But they went into Green Bay and took down the Packers, and that wasn't even close. Yeah. So I think this Bears team is perfect for Madden. So give me Chicago plus 6.
And candidly, fortunately for the Saints, they got to take on the worst team in Madden in the Carolina Panthers, because that's all that got them over the point differential edge. It's a different game if this is outside in Chicago. Moving on to Friday, Sean, the second half, kind of the more interesting half to me of the Elite Eight. Friday, 8 p.m. on the East Coast, 5 p.m. on the West Coast. Of course, the Washington Redskins eked out the home field as the four seed, taking what, I mean, Seattle had a plus 24, if I'm not mistaken. So Washington was really close. They had to score there at the end of that game. I think they got the turnover and the points. Redskins, 9.5 point home dogs.
That's a huge number.
300 on the money line for the Redskins. Seahawks minus 550. 46 is the total. Do I get a little bit of love for still having my championship game intact? When
certainly
I
certainly way ahead of me. I'm still good.
You're still good too.
I have Seahawks Chiefs.
So we're in a similar boat.
Yeah,
Colby and Sean. Do you want to take this? Do you want to take?
No, this is all you, Kramer.
You want me
There's
to take
one
first?
Team yeah. that's the most Make complete team so far in Madden Mayhem. You know, Mitch Vick's been the best player, but who's been the most complete team we've seen?
The Red Sox or the Red Sox? The Redskins. This has to come to an end, and I think it comes to an end in a big way. Give me Seattle laying the big points.
Love the Skins at home, the home dog. Nobody believes in them.
I'm Colby, on the Redskins.
Colby, oh, you're on the Redskins.
I'm on the Redskins with that. Look, I have the Chiefs or the Chiefs. I have the Seahawks winning, but the Redskins. It's too many points for a team that looks that
20
complete.
20-1.
The run game's been good.
Haskins
has been good. The defense has been playing.
And
ball.
I came up with the nickname the Gandy Man. Come on, yeah. You know I'm on the Skins here. The Gandy Man can
at a Liberty.
Yeah, I mean, good luck. I guess I think Russ. We finally see the best of Russ, and maybe this I don't know. This Redskins team's
grew
been playing
up a
out
diehard
of their mind.
Redskin fan too. So
who Russ was?
Yeah,
interesting. Danger Russ, revenge spot. Friday, the nightcap, the last game. Cleveland has been involved in some last games. Friday, the 22nd, 10 p.m. on the East Coast, 7 p.m. on the West Coast. The Colts, Philip Rivers and his illegitimate new children in Indianapolis head to Cleveland to take on the Browns. Browns minus three, minus 160 on the money line. Colts plus 120. 49.5 is the total. I mean, Sean, unfortunately you have the pick here. I'm certain I'm going to be stuck with the Browns. I do think they have a good squad, but this Colts team is electric. I have them winning my sweet 1600 bracket, and you know, the odds are finally starting to change a little bit. Still 8-1 though, Sean. And yeah, I think if you're looking at a future where it makes a little bit more sense to maybe not go mechanical parlay and just take the future. I mean, there's a version of this where, and I'll look at the point differential while you're talking, but I think there's a version of this where if the Colts win and the Bills win, the Colts could be at home.
Yeah.
In the AFC championship.
I like this Colts team a lot. Well-rounded team, good offensive line. Rivers seems to be playing well, well-coached squad. Cleveland, they played well, but I still think they have some holes, and Indy getting 3 points. I'm on the Colts all day. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you, Sean.
I'm going to back up the Colts are on this, man. I mean, look,
getting points. Yeah.
Rivers looks like they're like the best player since besides Mitch Vick in this game. And you know, that offensive line has been dominating they've looked great both games.
Yeah. And I think Darius Leonard can really rattle Baker Mayfield. And I don't think Odell Beckham Jr. is going to have a huge game like he did
last. If you can stop Minshew Mania, you can take down the dog pound. All right.
And don't look now. If you want to talk about a future that is kind of sneaky, the only team that can really catch the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of home field in the AFC is the Cleveland Browns.
Oh,
so again, if they win in convincing fashion, that future of 8-1 for them is very realistic. Because remember, they have a plus 22 right now on the point differential. So they could, in theory, catch the Chiefs, and they would certainly, obviously, pass the Bills. On the NFC side, Sean.
Yes,
I think Seattle at 5-1 when they basically have a bye in the next round, walking into the semifinals.
5-1's not bad. I'm still going Colts at 800. I gave it out at plus 1,000. I still think at 800, it's still a really good price. Kramer, do you want to give out our Super Bowl champ AFC NFC?
Last thing I was going to say was just that if Seattle wins and for whatever reason the New Orleans Saints don't win, we're going to be probably looking at a conference championship in Seattle. So from an odds perspective, that could be some value there. Who's your pick?
I'll go. I've Colts and Seattle. Even though I took Skins plus 9.5, the number's too big, but I think I wouldn't be surprised Seattle moves on.
Give me Colts in Seattle, and the Colts pull it out as 8-1 dogs, winning Madden Mayhem. Colby, adjusted Super Bowl championship.
I'm sticking to what I did initially because I'm that much of a prophet. look, I got the Seahawks beating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So
I kind of want to stick to the same thing where I was before, and that's I'm with Colby. I'm going with my original pick.
So you're a prophet too, right?
Well, I'm the kind of prophet who has big old balls because I didn't take the Kansas City Chiefs. I went straight. Give me Seattle. Give me Buffalo. And our boy, the author, the man who's building all those awesome bracket viewers, Tyler. He put together some numbers, Sean, for what people have left in Madden Mayhem. And if you look at the 32 team contest, only 40 people have the Bills in the final four. Only 40.
Damn.
So I am special. More people have the Browns than the Bills.
That's crazy.
But the most impressive thing is I saw two people pick the Redskins to win it all.
Wow.
So
well, if they
kudos to them.
Yeah, they're getting a big chunk of that 10,000 MyBookie credit prize pool.
That's a ballsy play.
The breakdown though: Chiefs, 30% of the pool have the Chiefs winning. Next, Saints, 17%. After that, Ravens at 16.9%. But of the teams remaining, after the 17% of the people that are on the Saints, it goes down to 2% on Seattle. So definitely a long shot. My bracket is a long shot, and it might just come true. My pick, Seattle over Buffalo, 29-26.
Hey, that's almost as
that was a bourbon score.
Buffalo
even throwing out the score, yeah. Kramer.
Well, I'm not a little bitch like you guys.
All right. I have Colts beating, who did I say? Seattle 28-21. So look for that 8-1 square. Try to get that. And of course, sign up for the squares, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares. We're giving away another $500. This is cash, cold, hard PayPal cash. And all you got to do is give a 5-star review, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/squares for all the info there. Of course, get in your Madden Mayhem picks. MyBookie.ag, promo code SGP. Play when it get paid. Kicking things off again. Elite Eight to the championship game Thursday, 8 p.m. on the East, 5 o'clock Pacific.
Thank you for participating in the Sports Gambling Podcast.
And for Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm Sean, stacking the money green, and he is Ryan.
Proud to be an honorary member of the LPD.
Kramer, let it ride.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.